Welcome back to another episode of Arm Drag Takedown with Poyo Del Mar. I'm your host, Poyo Del Mar, the Bay Area's most wrestling-obsessed drag personality. This is the wrestling podcast with a queer twist. But don't worry if you're not a member of the LGBTQ community. Everyone is welcome here, where we discuss all of the recent happenings on our favorite pro wrestling televised broadcasts, as well as give some thoughts, opinions, and updates on things that are happening in the pro wrestling world. And of course, I bring to you some of the best professional wrestling celebrities each and every week to discuss our shared love of professional wrestling. This week, of course, I'll be talking about the take-home show for WWE's Hell in a Cell pay-per-view on the Raw brand, as well as the big return of Kane to that brand. In addition to which, we'll also be touching on the potential departure of Neville and reports that Nia Jax has taken a personal leave of absence from WWE's Raw brand. We'll be going over to SmackDown, where we look at the continued heel turn of Sami Zayn, and we'll be touching base on what's happening on Impact Wrestling as they head towards Bound for Glory November 5th in Ottawa, Canada. I am excited. This week we'll also be joined by former multiple-time Impact Wrestling champion Robbie E to talk about what he's doing currently, in addition to his series of videos for Muscle and Fitness magazine, which have dubbed him the Dad Bod Destroyer. All of that and much more on this episode of Arm Drag Takedown with Poyo Del Mar. Follow Arm Drag Takedown with Poyo Del Mar on Facebook and Twitter. Search for us at ADT with PDM. That's ADT with PDM. Arm Drag Takedown with Poyo Del Mar. It's time now for the Arm Drag Takedown of Monday Night Raw. Monday Night Raw kicked off with a way too long promo from Kurt Angle in the ring, flapping his gums. Kurt, you talk too damn much, I'm afraid. It's true. Oh, yes, it is damn true. Sometimes I wish you would just quiet down a little bit. Luckily for us, and I very rarely say luckily for us when it involves the newly reformed Shield, the Shield cuts him off to talk about how they are going to dominate at this weekend's upcoming TLC pay-per-view as they face The Miz, The Bar, and Braun Strowman in a four-on-three match. As it turns out, of course, all of the men involved in that big match surround the ring, with Kurt Angle making a tag team match between champions Ambrose and Rollins versus The Bar for later in the night, as well as saying that during the upcoming Braun Strowman versus Roman Reigns cage match, if Roman Reigns is able to beat Braun, Braun will lose his spot in the main event at TLC, and it will become just a three-on-three match. However, if Braun should defeat Roman Reigns, then it becomes a five-on-three match, with the heels getting to choose a partner of their choice. Well, that plays out later on in the evening, as Curtis Axel decides that he wants to prove that he deserves a spot in the main event. And, of course, Braun Strowman basically goads him into beating down Roman Reigns. Axel rushes off to confront the newly reformed Shield, only to be discovered later on by The Miz, hanging upside down by his feet after a beatdown. He's just hanging there from a forklift. It was comedic and yet sad and pathetic. I really wish that WWE would commit to making The Miztourage a little bit more realistic in terms of being seen as contenders. I want to see Bo Dallas and Curtis Axel wearing those WWE tag team titles by WrestleMania. I think that they would be a great team to hold the belts. They look good together. Curtis Axel is looking the best of his career. He and Bo Dallas have a real nice chemistry in the ring, and I think that having the Miztourage chasing the tag team titles would do the Raw tag team division a little bit good. They need a boost in fresh faces, and the Miztourage could exactly be that. Meanwhile, we get to see Jason Jordan team with Apollo Crews and Titus O'Neil to defeat The Club and Elias. Ultimately, Apollo Crews hits a nice spin-up powerbomb on Anderson to pick up the win. I don't really understand this, because you've got The Club, or I guess they're the Good Brothers now, or whatever, You've got Anderson and Gallows, who are a premier team around the world. These men have been superstars outside of the WWF. They're former WWE tag team champions on the Raw brand. And now you're having them lose to a makeshift team of Jason Jordan, Apollo Crews, and Titus O'Neil. Now, Titus and Apollo haven't been able to pick up a win over Elias, much less over a team of this magnitude. I guess that they are benefiting now from Jason Jordan's push, but ultimately, I really think that this might have been a misstep. I just don't see it happening. I think that Jason Jordan, sure, push him if you want. I personally write off Apollo Crews and Titus O'Neil. They're done for me. And ideally, I know they want to get the most out of these men if they can. I read this interview with Titus O'Neil not that long ago where I think he's a really nice guy. He was on Lillian Garcia's podcast, and I think he's a really nice guy. He's got a great work ethic. He looks phenomenal. But for whatever reason, WWE has never bought into him completely. A man of his size and build should definitely, probably have done a little bit more than he has. But at this point, any momentum that they might have had for him or Apollo Crews is gone. So why they're hitching them to Jason Jordan's wagon is a little beyond me. And Elias, to be honest, is a situation where he can be moving up rather rapidly. I see him as a real potential contender for the Intercontinental title within the next 6 months. Cedric Alexander, one of the hottest men on the WWE Raw roster. And by that, I mean, damn, he's sexy. I almost envy Alicia Fox for getting a storyline romance with him. Shit. Defeated Jack Gallagher. Brian Kendrick tried to come to Gallagher's defense. It didn't work out. Ultimately, Rich Swann shows up. The Cruiserweights get into a brawl. Cedric Alexander picks up a nice victory here. In the grand scheme of things, I just don't give a shit about these guys. I think it's unfortunate. I don't watch 205 Live. When Enzo Amore is the best thing about a product, you can just count me out, all right? And now that, going back to the idea that I mentioned earlier, the possibility that Neville is gone from this division makes me lose significant interest. He was the one thing about this division that really captured my attention. He is a world-class athlete, and I probably agree wholeheartedly with his assessment that he was being wasted on this brand and would never have been able to advance beyond the idea of a cruiserweight in terms of what WWE saw him as. And when he found out that some of his buddies, namely Austin Aries, were making more on the independent circuit, taking less bookings, boo, he was out of there. So I think that Neville leaving is a definite setback for 205 Live. I would love to see some of the other competitors on the brand get a big boost in terms of visibility, but I'm not sure that that's going to happen. Certainly not in my eyes. To that end, later in the show, Enzo Amore comes out to run down the newly crowned WWE Cruiserweight Champion, Kalisto. He's talking smack about how he is going to defeat him Sunday at TLC and take back his championship. Kalisto comes out to confront the former champion, only to be beaten down by a wide array of people from the Cruiserweight division who are coming to Enzo's aid suddenly. I'm not exactly sure. Apparently now things are shifting in the division. I don't get this exactly. Mustafa Ali tries to make the save, but in the end, Mustafa Ali and Kalisto get a beat down. We've apparently got a new faction that's happening in 205 Live. Girl, I don't give a damn. Also on the show, Sasha Banks and Alicia Fox continue a storyline that allegedly was going to be given to Nia Jax. As many of you have probably heard, and as I mentioned at the top of the show, rumors have been circulating that Nia Jax has asked for her release from WWE. Other rumors circulating across the internet state that she simply was given a leave of absence by WWE. Translation of this for me, I think that Nia asked for her release, in part because of the fact that she is aware that Asuka is being brought up to the main roster in WWE on Raw, and the plan currently is that Asuka is going to go on an undefeated streak after winning the Women's Championship. Well, that means that Nia's opportunity, her ship has sailed, honey. If they are going to put the belt on Asuka and have it remain there for an extended period of time, Nia is going to get the same treatment on the main roster that she got in NXT, which means that she faced Asuka a variety of times and never got to hold the championship. Nia recognizes that she's already facing an uphill battle because she doesn't have the look that WWE wants for a women's champion, and She is now in a situation where another competitor is going to come in and leapfrog over her into title contention. And reality speaks that she's only gotten that one big chance at the belt. If you recall, she was in a four-way match for the title a few pay-per-views back. She came up on the short end of that deal. Nia doesn't appear that she's going to get another chance anytime soon, so she may very well have asked for her release. I believe that they are masking this as giving her a leave of absence to take care of personal affairs because word is that she's already been filmed on Total Divas. So if you think that WWE is going to grant a release to an artist or a star that they're going to be promoting on one of their sister products, you are out of your mind. There is no way they're going to let Nia Jax wind up on a competitor's brand while she's being promoted through a mainstream television show like Total Divas. If they have to, Nia Jax will sit on her ass for months until airing of Total Divas ends, and then they can release her. Unlike Neville, who probably had nothing else going other than his cruiserweight storyline, Nia is involved in other products that they are looking to promote heavily. They just finished filming that series, and they haven't even begun airing it yet. Nia, if in fact my suspicions are true, is going to be sitting on the shelf for quite a while. I wish her the best of luck. Nia is my favorite female competitor on the Raw brand. She's unique. She's interesting. And if her promo skills notched up just a little bit, she would make a fantastic champion. Tacky as it sounds to come from me, I think that Nia's big drawback is that she doesn't sound mean whatsoever in her promos. There's something about her voice that is extremely feminine, and to partner that with the kind of brutality that she presents in the ring is a little offsetting for me. But still, I just think that ultimately she doesn't have the look that WWE wants to promote long-term in its women's division, and that is what she's suffering from right now. If you've asked for your release, Nia, you've got my full support, but I would really love to see you back on my television and in a championship position sooner rather than later. The WWE Raw Tag Team Champions Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins come out to defend their belts against The Bar, who they're going to be facing this Sunday at TLC. I really think at this point it's high time that we begin to involve other teams in this storyline. Not unlike what we're seeing on SmackDown, the stagnation of the Raw Tag Team division is pretty prominent right now. Another reason, for example, why I think the Miz Taurus should step into this tag division and present themselves as a challenge for the champions. If, in fact, they're going to keep the titles on Rollins and Ambrose for a while, they need a nice heel team to compete for those. Right now, that position is taken by The Bar, but The Bar and Ambrose and Rollins feel a little bit played out to me. It's reached a definite expiration date, in my opinion. There was a promo by Finn Balor where he was addressing Sister Abigail and Bray Wyatt from last week. Rumor has it, by the way, that Bray Wyatt is out because of viral meningitis, so he's off TV, as is his brother. By the way, his brother being Bo Dallas. How both brothers caught viral meningitis, making them potentially infectious to the rest of the roster, beyond me, but they're getting a little bit of time out. I'm sure that they are resting and rejuvenating as best one can when battling meningitis. But anyway, I am sure that they will return to our screens soon, rejuvenated from their time off. But during his promo, Finn addresses Bray being Sister Abigail, and then through the power of CGI or editing magic, he repeatedly morphs into a orange and black version of his demon character. It was a little bit Halloween and a little bit Darth Maul, but nonetheless, he says that he is the demon, and the demon is looking forward to meeting Sister Abigail. Knowing that Bray is out with meningitis, whether or not that happens at TLC is still up in the air. My guess is it probably won't, but it's certainly building, and I think that another month or so of this, leading up to the next pay-per-view for Raw, it would probably be effective at this point in time, especially since the introduction of the Sister Abigail character has been so monumental, giving the time for this character to take hold and for anticipation for the match between the demon and Sister Abigail to build is probably a good idea. Bayley and Mickey James ended up defeating Emma and Alexa Bliss in a tag team match that saw some interesting back and forth between the women. Ultimately, Mickey picks up the pinfall victory over Alexa Bliss. What this says to me is that, unfortunately, Mickey will not be getting the win this Sunday and her 7th women's championship in WWE at TLC. Generally speaking, when the challenger defeats the champion multiple weeks in a row in tag team or other action, it means that they fall short on the big payday. And I would love to see Mickey pick up her seventh title, but I'm just not foreseeing it for TLC. You know, my fingers are still crossed for you, Mickey, but if history is any lesson for me, it means that you're not going to get that belt. Ultimately, Braun Strowman and Roman Reigns face off in a big cage match to close the show. This is a main event anywhere you would go. A match of this magnitude between Braun Strowman and Roman Reigns inside a cage, already pretty stellar, and it saw some fun back-and-forth action between these huge monsters. Strowman looked stronger than ever, and of course they were playing up the idea that he recently almost retired Big Show in a similar cage by throwing the Big Show through the side of the cage, causing him to get hip surgery, which he's recuperating nicely from, according to what I've read. The big, big twist and turn here is that as the match progresses, without anyone even remotely suspecting it was going to happen, boom, Kane's music and intro hit, his pyros hit, while Roman is distracted by the pyros, expecting perhaps that the big red machine will enter from the runway. What do you know? Kane comes up through the mat and destroys Roman Reigns. A series of choke slams, followed by a couple of running power slams from Braun Strowman and a tombstone pile driver. Braun Strowman picks up the victory. It is going to be 5-on-3. The Shield facing The Miz, The Bar, Braun Strowman, and a returning Kane at TLC. I haven't been overly interested in TLC, but I do think that this unexpected twist makes TLC just a little more interesting. That is our Arm Drag Takedown for this week's Monday Night Raw. Let's take a look at what's happening on the Blue Brand. This week's SmackDown Live kicks off with an in-ring promo by General Manager Daniel Bryan, who is out discussing the recent heel turn of Sami Zayn. As you might be aware, Sami Zayn turned heel by saving longtime rival slash best friend Kevin Owens from a top of the Hell in a Cell onslaught from Shane O'Mac. He pulled Kevin Owens out of the way, sending Shane O through a announce table, allowing Kevin Owens to pick up the win at Hell in a Cell and cementing a heel turn for himself. Well, Daniel Bryan is in the ring telling Sami Zayn how incredibly disappointed he is in him. Well, Sami Zayn retorts back by saying that he and Daniel Bryan have plenty in common, except for the fact that now Daniel Bryan is a sellout. Kevin Owens joins the fray. He and Sami end up hugging it out in the ring, trash-talking Daniel. And Daniel ends the opening segment by announcing that he's going to go find a couple of guys to punch Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn in the face, which, of course, inevitably sets up for a big tag team match later on in the evening. Meanwhile, Charlotte Flair, Naomi, and Becky Lynch defeated Lana, Tamina, and Natalya, with Lana tapping out to Charlotte's figure eight. Ultimately, Natalya tries to attack Charlotte with a chair, as she did a couple of weeks ago, but Charlotte decides to retaliate in turn, sending the women's champion scurrying off through the audience. Next up was Pulp Fashion. Now, I want to say that I really like the Fashion Police. I think that Breezango is really funny. I will admit that at this point, I've gotten a little bit tired of the comedy act, and the inclusion of the Ascension in this takes it to all new levels of absurdity. It probably wouldn't be as offensive to me as a wrestling fan if, in fact, Breezango had the opportunity to go into the ring and show the true level of talent that they have as performers, competitors. Ultimately, one would think for most professional wrestlers, the idea would be to enter WWE and establish a Hall of Fame type of career, which would involve certainly at least one run with the WWE tag team titles. Between the two teams, they've been on the main roster for a number of years and haven't had one significant victory yet. Not one. There's been no championship reigns whatsoever, and now both teams are relegated to a comedy act playing off of one another. As I mentioned earlier, this premise, it's fun, but I really believe that it has passed its prime. I bet you, though, Tyler Breeze and Fandango don't give a damn because of the fact that they are probably making mad cash on product sales at this point. They're selling t-shirts, and I bet you they're getting bigger paychecks than they've ever gotten because of the fact that they've now become popular among kids and people who want to buy t-shirts and Fashion Police memorabilia. Well, that's fine, but ultimately, I wish that we could see these characters play this story out in the ring much more so than backstage. I don't want to say that this has completely run its course, but I wish that we would see a little bit less of these and a little bit more in the ring from these teams. Meanwhile, after a big victory last week over AJ Styles, where he cemented his place as WWE SmackDown United States Champion, Baron Corbin comes out to face off against Sin Cara. Now, Sin Cara has been somebody we haven't seen. He's been the unseen Cara, in fact, because we haven't seen him in a while. But here he comes out to face off against Baron Corbin and shockingly picks up a count-out victory. Where exactly this is going for Baron Corbin and Sin Cara, who knows? But if it's an opportunity for a really talented entertainer like Sin Cara to have a momentary push, even if it's very short-lived, I'm all for it. I suspect that ultimately Baron Corbin is going to beat his ass. In all honesty, I wouldn't mind one bit if Sin Cara took that belt right off of him, because Baron Corbin bores me to tears, and Sin Cara at least is a little bit more interesting in the ring in terms of what he's capable of. We'll find out where this is taking us. It was unexpected and it was a shock, so what they've got in store for us is equally mysterious. We cut away to a in-ring promo with Jinder Mahal, the WWE SmackDown champion, and the Singh brothers, who come out to address the fact that they are, shocking, not respected by U.S. fans. He talks about his recent trip back to India, where he was treated as a national treasure, basically, and how he is not valued in the WWE. And he says that a huge part of that is because he has not defeated the one person that everyone universally respects, and that is Brock Lesnar. Jinder Mahal, the modern-day Maharaja, you've heard it right, has challenged Brock Lesnar for a match. I don't know how WWE is going to make this believable. Now, they've done a very good job of putting Jinder Mahal over as a believable WWE champion. Granted, his championship reign, while extensive, because at this point he's outreigned both of Ric Flair's runs with the title, as well as numerous other people's championship reigns. He's held the belt longer, and he's managed to pick up some good wins. He's got wins over Shinsuke Nakamura at a couple pay-per-views, Randy Orton at various pay-per-views, and other people. But how they are going to make Jinder Mahal a believable challenger, or even be able to stand toe-to-toe in the ring with Brock Lesnar, is something that is really going to take a lot of effort from WWE. Meanwhile, AJ Styles comes out and cuts him off to challenge him for a match with the belt. Now, to AJ's credit, he has not yet had his rematch from when he lost the title way back when to Randy Orton. So perhaps he is due a championship match, but it doesn't look the best when just last week Baron Corbin pinned him, right? Is anybody else seeing the problem with this? I hope so. As it turns out, one of the Singh brothers will face off against AJ next week to defend the Maharaja's honor. We then go to a rematch between Bobby Roode and Dolph Ziggler. This feud continues and things are amped up a notch, because in this match, Dolph Ziggler pulls Bobby Roode's tights to pick up the victory. This is clearly setting up for a rubber match between the two. I'm a little bit shocked, though, that Roode has already logged his first televised defeat in SmackDown. I guess it could have been against somebody far worse than Dolph Ziggler. The guy is highly talented, even if he's not at the top of the game right now. Then it comes down to Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens in a match against Randy Orton and Shinsuke Nakamura. While the pairing of Nakamura and Orton doesn't make any sense to me on a technical level, I certainly understand why they have paired Shinsuke up with Orton. Orton cuts a great promo, and he's at the main event level of the SmackDown brand, as is Shinsuke up there in terms of being a top contender, but the man can't cut a promo in English to save his life. Team him up with Orton. Orton gets to do the talking. They both get to strut their stuff in the ring, and things work out well for everyone. In this match, of course, Orton and Shinsuke were the people who were out to defend Daniel Bryan, if you will. And ultimately, Sami Zayn ends up picking up a pinfall victory over Randy Orton, sending, of course, the message that his heel turn has, everything is paid off. He's finally getting a high-level victory, and things are looking good for him. Once Zayn and Owens are gloating to Daniel Bryan about, what are you going to do now? What are you going to do next week? How are you going to stop us? Daniel drops the bombshell. Well, that isn't going to be up to me, he says. Next week, Shane McMahon returns, and he's the one who's going to take care of you. Remember, Zayn cost Shane McMahon his match with Kevin Owens at Hell in the Cell, and I'm sure that Shane O'Mac is looking for payback. I think that the Sami Zayn heel turn is one of the best things that could have possibly happened to the guy, and now he is fully and wholeheartedly in the main event level roster on SmackDown, despite only having one high-profile victory. Good on Sami Zayn, good on SmackDown, and good for the viewers. That's the Arm Drag Takedown of what was going on this week on WWE SmackDown. Now, let's go over and take a look at GFW Impact Wrestling. This week's GFW Impact Wrestling kicks off with a recap of last week's shows, ending with Moose and Stephen Bonner ransacking the America's Top Team Workout Center. You know, I have to tell you, I didn't care about that last week. I thought it looked super generic. And the fact that we are now going to get an in-ring confrontation between Moose, Stephen Bonner, and America's Top Team with Bobby Lashley doesn't interest me that much. I will have to say that I wish that we could reserve this feud for professional wrestlers. I'm not a fan of UFC. I don't follow UFC. So none of these men who are involved as extras bring any cachet to this angle for me whatsoever. I hope that Bobby Lashley and Moose will settle it in the ring. I'm sure that they will. Ideally, all of the people from UFC will be able to return to their respective sports without further incident. In-ring action kicked off this week with a match between Chris Adonis facing off against Johnny Impact. It's retribution for Impact's attack at the end of last show at the hands of Adonis. Adonis smashed a board over his head on behalf of GFW Global Champion Eli Drake, who was in Japan at the time. I'm shocked by how quickly Impact picked up the win this week over Adonis. One would think that Adonis would have put up a greater fight, but Johnny hits a corkscrew elbow drop off the top rope for the pinfall, only to see Eli Drake hit the ring, beating him with a belt. The highlight of this for me, really, was the fact that Eli Drake had his white linen pants ripped off of him. And let me tell you, I was impressed. I was impressed by his Hanes boxer briefs. They're a little more flattering than his usual ring gear was. So he and Impact end up trading shots with the belt. And just as Impact is about to get a real severe beatdown at the hands of Adonis and Drake, Garza Jr. hits the ring. It looks like we're going to be seeing a Garza Jr. and Impact tag team match against Drake and Adonis before we get to Bound for Glory on November 5th in Ottawa, Ontario, Canada. That should be an interesting match. Next, we cut away to a five-way dance held in Cancun, Mexico at the Hard Rock Cafe for AAA. It is Tejano, Fantasma Jr., James Storm, Eddie Edwards, and EC3 mixing it up in a five-way action. Ultimately, it breaks down to every man for himself. The AAA stars who have been teaming in GFW on Impact Wrestling every Thursday are going at it initially, and they keep referencing something that happened earlier in the evening, which, of course, how the hell would we know what that is? But apparently it's between Tejano and Fantasma, and Fantasma's father is at ringside, so they're going to target him, apparently, but that never happens. Ultimately, Fantasma hits some kind of a cradle shock pile driver, it appears. Long story short, Tejano picks up the win over top of EC3. It is good in-ring action, but honestly, this situation between the five of these guys is, in my opinion, simply a way to keep five men busy when there's not much storyline that's happening for any one of them individually. Next up, we see Ohio versus Everybody going off to Tijuana in an effort to talk to Konnan. Konnan says that if they can defeat a team in Crash, the Crash promotion in Mexico, then and only then will he talk to the gringos. You know, honestly, I don't like OVE. I will say that I think that the action that's happening on Impact is among the best that they've seen in a while. The roster among the best in a while. I feel like all of these jetting off to other promotions is really jumping the shark. And I think that I would much prefer to see what they focus on as members of GFW in GFW. And for example, when they did this Pluto Network flashback or whatever it was called, and they went gratuitously to show Samoa Joe, things like that to me just reek of being desperate. And I don't think they need that right now. They've got great stars from around the world. I wish they would get on a normal filming and production schedule that would allow them to do in-house shows on a regular basis where they could develop their own characters and own storylines without having to go to all of these other promotions around the world and do these sort of Franken storylines. Like, what I mean by that, it's like, you know, how Frankenstein was thrown together from pieces of this and pieces of that. I feel a little bit like what's happening in GFW right now is Franken promotion. GFW has a skeleton crew of wrestlers, and instead of filming things in-house, they're going around the world to put things together into their show. It's not bad. It's not wrong. I'm just not liking it. I would much rather have an in-house show that I can follow. Something that is cohesive, both in story and production value. We'll get to that a little bit later in the OVE at Crash Promotions discussion. The progression of the Grado and Joseph Park storyline has happened so quickly. We've gone from him feeling taken advantage of to confronting Joseph Park in the ring. Joseph Park admits initially that he's been guilty of siphoning off all of Grado's profits. Then he immediately goes to the idea that I own you. You're the reason. I'm the only reason that you're even here. And within seconds, they have got a Monsters Ball match at Bound for Glory signed between the two of them. And shocker, it's not going to be Joseph Park at all. It'll be Grado facing off against Abyss in a Monsters Ball match. Look, I'm trying to think how to put this. So some of you may know that I'm a writer. Outside of my love for professional wrestling, I'm a journalist as well as a fiction writer. And writing usually has three acts. That means each act gets played out in their entirety. Well, depending on whether or not you consider the first efforts by Grado to stay in the United States the first act of this story, I look at the fact that we now have Grado and Joseph Park as a storyline unto itself. They've gone from being allies. Joseph Park then immediately plays this whole very political, Trump-inspired, you know, we own you, boy. There was no playing out of that storyline at all. That should have been the second act. And then the third act would be, you know, Grado attempting to free himself from the grips of this person. Really, it was just happening so fast. And I really feel like that's a big part of everything that's going on right now in Impact Wrestling. Everything in storyline terms seems to be really, really progressing at a rate that doesn't even allow for the viewers to get a full understanding of what is happening in the story or to become emotionally invested in it. Yes, they've been emotionally invested in Grado, but what is going on with this heel turn for Joseph Park? That's the question. And 5 seconds after the match is signed between Grado and Abyss, we get a cameo appearance by James Mitchell, an iconic professional wrestling manager from early in Abyss's career. He was instrumental in early Impact Wrestling, or TNA at the time. And this all happened so fast, there was no build for it. There was no impact to this great cameo appearance. It was just wasted. We then go away to see OVE defending at Crash in Mexico. Between the fact that the shoddy camera work and the, like, the changing lights, they looked like they were fucking wrestling in a black light for part of the time, and the fact that Crash doesn't even have the six-sided ring, please, Impact, have some integrity for what you're trying to produce and streamline this. I know it's going to take a little bit of effort for you to film more than, you know, 4 or 5 days of wrestling per every few months to string out into months worth of television product, but while you can supplement some of your program with these outside appearances, overall, I feel like this is really doing you a tremendous disservice. Yes, it's fantastic that you've got champs that go around the world, but you are you're diluting your own product, in my opinion. Dan Lambert and America's Top Team then come to the ring to school the Impact Zone on wrestling history. While it was rather amusing that the Impact Zone was chanting, "We don't care, we don't care, we don't care," Dan Lambert did make some interesting points during his promo, calling the audiences of professional wrestling mindless sheeps, amongst other things. I thought it was really interesting, actually, that he gave a rundown of so much title history. I knew about half the answers to his questions about what people's first titles were. I didn't remember that Ric Flair's first tag team title was with Rip Hawk, but, you know, you win some, you lose some. I definitely remember the things about Jerry Lawler and Kurt Hennig, as well as questions regarding the Road Warriors. I didn't realize he actually owned all those championship belts. That was kind of interesting. But ultimately, it breaks down with America's Top Team dominating a number of Impact Wrestling's finest, including members of the X Division. Of course, they destroyed Stefan Bonner and Moose in the ring, setting up for a tag team match at Bound for Glory between Stefan Bonner and Moose versus, I think, Bobby Lashley and King Mo. God knows that eventually Impact needs to do something with King Mo. I think they signed him to some kind of long-term contract a number of years ago and haven't done shit with him. You better get some kind of a return on investment because it has not paid off up to date. I thought that the promo was well done, if a little bit long. It's very hard for me because of the fact that I am not, as I already stated, a big fan of mixed martial arts. The MMA doesn't do a lot for me. I'm not overly familiar with America's Top Team other than what I've seen on Impact Wrestling. We get to see a beatdown of OVE in Mexico. Yawn, 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 yawn. I really feel like this fucking process is on repeat. If you're not going to move the story forward, just let it coast. You don't have to keep replaying the same kind of bullshit scenarios over and over. And ultimately, that takes us to the main event this week, which is Taya Valkyrie versus Rosemary for the first time ever in the ring, especially on Impact Television. Taya Valkyrie's ring entrance is, bar none, the best in Impact Wrestling. Rosemary's is probably a close second best. I think that it's going to be a bit wasted that these two women are going to be facing off in one-on-one action at Bound for Glory, especially knowing that Taryn Terrell apparently got bitch slapped so hard last week that she's been not cleared by the doctors to be at Bound for Glory in 2 weeks. So what you're telling me is that you can fight in these classic matches against Gail Kim 5 years ago, but one bitch slapping knocks you out of action, Taryn Terrell? Girl, hang up the tights or the tutu if that's the case. I don't understand it. It must be a scheduling conflict, but it was a poor choice to use the bitch slap as an excuse to remove Taryn Terrell from this four-way dance for the GFW Knockouts Championship at Bound for Glory. It really undermines her abilities to be perceived as a champion. In my opinion, if a bitch slap can do that, girl, we're done. Meanwhile, in the match, it was a great match between Taya and Rosemary. Taya picks up the victory, but just when Taya is about to get excessive with her beatdown of Rosemary, Rosemary sprays her with mist in the eyes, getting her back for last week, and apparently challenges her to what I'm interpreting as possibly a first blood match at Bound for Glory. By the way, quick shout out, we will have Sienna the Savage, the Global Force Wrestling Knockouts Champion, on next episode. We'll talk to her all about Bound for Glory as we lead up to that big event in Ottawa, Ontario, Canada. And that is the Arm Drag Takedown of GFW's Impact Wrestling Thursday nights on Pop TV. It is now time to take us to this week's special Arm Drag Takedown celebrity guest. You have seen him on Impact Wrestling for 7 years, as well as on the CBS hit series, The Amazing Race, where he and fellow Impact Wrestling superstar Brooke Adams placed fourth overall a number of seasons back. He is a two-time Impact Wrestling Tag Team Champion, a former X Division Champion, as well as a former Impact Television Champion. Now dubbed the Dad Bod Destroyer, you can catch his weekly video blogs on how to use your children as part of your fitness routine on Muscle and Fitness Magazine's website. Please welcome at this time to Arm Drag Takedown with Poyo Del Mar, my special guest, Robbie E.
Hey,
how are you?
Good, you're a minute late, man. What's going on?
I know. I was pulling up. It's true. I am a minute late. I was pulling up all the information on your website, and as soon as I pulled up your website, it started talking, so I had to stop the recording. I just wanted information so we could talk.
No problem, man. I'm messing with you.
Yeah, no, it immediately pulled up your new video series on how to be a dad bod destroyer.
Awesome.
How is it that you decided to start your new YouTube series with Muscle and Fitness Magazine about how to destroy the dad bod?
Okay, so basically, when I did The Amazing Race, Muscle and Fitness did their first article on me about, like, how I prepared for the race and stayed fit during it and everything. And then they did a follow-up article on me for being in Impact Wrestling, and we've always kind of kept in touch. Muscle and Fitness, like, reaches out to me to see if I have new, like, projects going on. So when they saw that I became a twin dad and that I was still, like, staying fit and living, like, my normal life, they like, couldn't believe it. You know, just together we kind of collaborated and came up with the idea of, like, to keep dads and shit. Because basically the way I look at it is, at least my friends from my childhood, when they became a dad, there's no other way to describe it than they just kind of look like a dad now, whether it's that they got, like, a bigger belly or they're losing hair. They just look like a dad. And their excuse is always, you know, they don't have time to go to the gym because they want to spend that extra time with their kids, which does make sense. So I've kind of combined the two. So it's while you're hanging out with your little babies, you're working out. So whether you're doing sit-ups or push-ups and you're making funny faces at them, or whether you're actually picking up your babies and using them as dumbbells, you can combine the two and get a workout in while your kids are happy.
Yeah, I saw you, like, doing curls with two kids in, like, car seats.
Yeah, I mean, it could be that. You could be using your kids for raises. You could have them on your shoulders and be doing squats. You know, you could do all different kinds of stuff. I'm using babies as dumbbells. It works, and they love it, dude. They laugh. They think it's, like, the best thing.
Right. Well, I mean, in the gay community, at least, like, the dad bod is apparently a thing. So, I mean, of course, your bod is also a thing in the community, but I don't...
What do you say? People like dad bods?
Yeah, it's, like, a thing. The dad bod is, like, a thing.
No. Before, so they're into, like, a gut?
I don't know what it is, but I'm going to tell you, as a person who's definitely not ripped like you are, I'm embracing the idea that somebody wants to, like, rub my belly while I'm eating ice cream.
Well, then they don't have to use the dad bod workouts, but to me, as far as everyone I know, they definitely don't want a dad bod. But I guess I can see where you're coming from.
Well, I think what it really comes down to is whatever your personal aesthetic is and what makes an individual feel good. If you, the funny thing to me is that last night before I went to bed, I was just scrolling through whatever was online and I saw this article that shows this guy and he's like, I don't know how old he was in the time of the photo, but it said the headline was like the actual results of becoming a parent. And it shows this like fresh faced guy who looks fit, and then afterwards he looks devastated. He's, like, exhausted looking. He's heavier. He's, like, balding. So what you're talking about is true.
Well, that's kind of like, and what me and my wife said was, we're like, all right, we're going into this. We're having twins. This is going to be hard and life-changing. But, like, we don't have to change our lives or who we are just because we have kids. Like, our goal is to maintain and stay who we are while being parents. Like, being parents doesn't make you change as a person, or you shouldn't change the things you do or like just because now you have children. Find ways to include them in it. Or plus, I mean, I want to stay in shape and I want to stay doing the things I do because I want to be a role model for my kids. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, and you and your wife are clearly quite different than the average couple out there who are having kids. Your wife is a fitness model and both of you are highly involved in your athletics and fitness, and I think that that's a little different. And the interesting thing to me about this is that we quite often hear about the concept of, like, for lack of a better term and to sound completely sexist, women letting themselves go, you know, after they've had kids or finding it really difficult to regain their pre-child body. You know, I think that you're talking about and addressing the fact that even dads have this issue because if you want to be an active parent in your child's life, it takes time, which would have been previously spent just focusing on your fitness and on yourself.
Exactly. You know, if a normal person works a 9-to-5 job and they go to the gym at 5 to 7 when they get home from work, but their kids go to bed at 7, it's like now they want those 2 hours to play with their kids, which, you know, it's understandable. So you got to find a way to, you know, if you can't wake up at 5 in the morning and do it before work. You got to find a way to combine the two. That's why the Dad Bod Destroyer was created.
And if you've got twins, I'm sure that they're waking you up before you're ready to be woken up anyways. A fact of parenting.
Dude, it's another world. Yeah, they go to bed a little after 7, and then now they wake up a little after 7. So, it's kind of the time that I was waking up anyway, but either way, I need coffee. It takes me a while to get up, but I mean, now I need my energy immediately because they're in bed jumping on me, want to play, so it definitely changed too.
I'm sure that also doubles up the joy and whatnot, you know, 2 for the price of 1 and what have you.
Exactly, and again, we only have twins, so it's all I know. You know, I don't know what it's like to only have one baby because I only know having two, so to me, it's like, you know, I'm in the routine and it seems simple. Like, so many people that have one kid are like, I don't know how you do it with two, but it's like, I don't know how easy it is to only have one, so this is normal to me, so it works out.
Yeah, my mom's youngest sister had triplets, so just consider yourself a third luckier than some people.
Oh my god, and I mean, did you hear now Christy Hemme's having quadruplets?
What?
You haven't heard that? She's pregnant with quadruplets right now, yeah.
How does that even happen?
I don't know. She made the announcement a few weeks ago. Check out her Twitter and her Instagram. She's got pictures and everything. It's insane.
Holy crap. I mean, I'm not going to speculate, but I only really hear of, like, multiple huge pregnancies like that when there's, like, IVF or something. So, anyway, whatever. Good for her. Congratulations.
Yeah.
We had Gail Kim on 2 episodes ago, and Christy and Gail are BFFs. They're, like, best friends, and she didn't even mention that.
Wow.
God,
yeah,
I mean...
No, it's full on out there. She made the announcement and everything. So, I mean, that, you know, I think twins, like, I can't even imagine. I mean, that is just, your life is...
ruined.
I can't even imagine that. Having 4 kids lined up and feeding them, like, I can't even.
I mean, she's 2 breasts short for even feeding time.
I know. 2 on and another 2. You have to have a live-in nanny. I mean, there's no way to do that on your own, especially with her husband who works and travels. I mean, it's impossible.
Wow. Good for her. I'm sitting here actually with my jaw, like, completely agape because I can't imagine. I just really, that's literally beyond my imagination. So I wanted to ask you, because of the fact that you have been off of our televisions for a while, and I've read, of course, in previous interviews that you talk about, you know, this seems like a natural progression as they're trying to restructure what Impact Wrestling is, and as a veteran face of the company, you know, you might need some time away to allow them to restructure and reshape the way people are expecting things. Do you anticipate returning to the company?
Well, I don't know if you heard, but I've asked for my release. I'm no longer contracted to Impact.
Okay, that's what I thought I'd read, but I was looking for it on the internet, and I couldn't find it again.
Yeah, no, I mean, it was just about 2 weeks ago, basically. You know, my contract turned into where it was, the more I wrestled, the more I got paid, and that's how it was restructured, and I haven't been, you know, they sent me to NOAH in Japan for a little bit, and then they haven't brought me back, and I'm 34 years old, I have baby twins, I got a life, I feel like Robbie E has more to offer, not only the wrestling world, but just the world in general, and I just can't sit around and wait any longer, so I love Impact with all my heart. It was, an amazing 7.5 years, but... I had to answer my release if I wasn't going to regularly be active on the roster.
Right. I mean, it's one thing that if you have a contract that guarantees you a base pay or something, but if it's based on appearance and you're not appearing, then you're wasted.
And that's it. And that's what it turned into. And again, you know, I'm thankful for everything I was given, but at 34, I'm in the best shape of my life. I feel like I just feel like I have a lot more to offer. So whatever that is for or wherever I end up, who knows, but I just had to take a risk, and, yeah, I mean, it is what it is. But again, no ill will, no negative feelings towards them. It's wrestling, I get it, and that's really it, man. So now, the past 2 weeks, I'm just kind of feeling out some options, you know, talking to some new people and seeing what's out there.
Yeah, and you've never said a negative thing about Impact. You've had a really great experience there, and, you know, obviously you were extremely loyal for 7 years, so... Definitely, I don't think that people will take there being any ill will in that situation at all.
Yeah, I mean, without I'm the first one to admit. I mean, they gave me the opportunity. Without them, I wouldn't have been on a reality. reality show. I wouldn't have traveled the world. I wouldn't have been on, you know, worldwide television for all those years. So there's no reason to have any, you know, negative feelings. And like you said, 7.5 years is a hell of a lot longer of a career than most people get. That some people get to have. So, you know, you got it in the half glass. If the glass half empty or full, I always look at it like it's half full. So I'm thankful for the opportunities that they gave me.
Right. And you had, during your time there, they've given you so many opportunities to be very central in their programming at various times. I mean, I look back on your career and two different individual solo titles, two tag team runs, very high profile stuff with reality television right off the bat for you. That seems to be a pretty great career by most people's standards.
Yeah, exactly. And then again, thrown into that, just all the other doors it opened for me, you know, for even just all the independents, because, you know, I had name, that had name value, all the independents I've got to do all over the world, and South Africa, and Israel, and Australia, and all over Europe, and Mexico, you know, and Japan, all, you know, and those doors all open from becoming Robbie E and Impact, so.
When you look forward to going somewhere else, I'm really curious, because I was going to ask you if you were still with the company, if you feel it is time to shed some of the comedic elements of your personality and persona and come forward in a different light, like a rebirth of who you are and who the characters perceive to be. And I was wondering if that's what's on the kind of on the horizon as you move forward somewhere else.
Yeah, well, I mean, the way I look at it is there's always going to be a little Robbie E and Robbie E. I mean, it is who I am. It is how I became me. It's how I kind of stand out. I have, like, a different kind of wackiness to me. So I don't ever want to fully take that away. But, yeah, I do think, like you said, I think a lot of people just kind of look at me as a comedy guy that can't win matches. And I actually could wrestle, and people forget that. So I think I do need to, wherever I land next, show definitely at times a more serious side. And, you know, pull out some old school Robbie E, Rob Echoes, which is my name on, you know, the independence wrestling moves, and remind people that I can still go. So, yeah, there'll definitely be a new side of me and a little new attitude.
Yeah, I think that the problem becomes that when a character becomes viewed as comedic, I don't know, it's the expectation is not there for that person to actually win. It's almost always an upset or a shock if a person who's a comedy character comes out on top. And I don't think that
yeah, and that's what it kind of turned out to. So unless there was like a drastic change where I got hit in the head and had a memory loss and became a completely different person, it was kind of hard to not be looked at like that.
I'm not a huge fan of comedic characters in wrestling. I'll put that out there. And I look at people like Breezango or the Fashion Police in WWE and what's happening with them right now. And they're two phenomenal wrestlers. They are a great tag team, but their abilities in the ring by far take second priority over all of the stuff that's happening outside the ring for them. Or even more historically, you look at a team that like the Bushwhackers, and before that they were the Sheepherders, and I grew up in an era where the Sheepherders were like bloodthirsty, cutting people open with barbed wire and beating them with flagpoles and stuff like that. And then they went to WWE and they became comedy characters, and the expectation was almost never that they would win.
Yeah, I mean, it is what it is, but the thing is, I think in wrestling there does need to be a little bit of everything, because like you said, you don't like comedy wrestlers, but some people do, so it's like everyone likes different things, so you kind of have the variety. So without the comedy guys, then the serious guys aren't so serious, and the tough guys aren't so tough, you know what I'm saying? So somebody's got to take the role, in my opinion, of doing it.
No, absolutely, and I agree with you on that. I just think that it's not really that different, for example, than acting. If you think of, you know, mainstream actors and actresses, there are people who are seen as, oh, that's a comedy actor versus somebody who is considered a serious actor. And, you know, comedy actors
exactly.
So, and it's always shocking, for example, when Jim Carrey does a serious role and, like, that's what's going to get him an Oscar nomination or some kind of stuff like that. It's very similar in wrestling.
Yeah. No, I agree completely.
But the one thing I will say is that it was, with your physical appearance, you could have easily been packaged in a way that would have made you just that every other muscular, handsome guy who's muscular and handsome and, you know, that kind of package, which would have gotten you nowhere because it would have seemed so familiar.
Well, that's the thing. And that's why, like, even when I was starting out, when I was coming up in, like, 2000, 2001, too, is when, like, indie wrestling, like, strong style was popular and, like, Ring of Honor was starting. And guys like the SATs and Red and Samoa Joe and AJ Styles were all, like, getting big. And I was regularly on shows with a lot of these guys, and I knew I couldn't hit as hard as them. I knew I couldn't fly as much as them. But so instead, I said, let me be completely different than them and stand out. So it was kind of like my own way to just stand out to what everyone else was doing. And like you said, like so many people are just boring muscle guys that can wrestle. And it gets old. So like at least whether it was different or hokey or like I always lost, at least it kind of like made me a little bit memorable and be able to stand out, you know?
Well, absolutely. And I think that you guys certainly, at the beginning of your career, capitalized on something that was very hot and very trendy. So it made you that it capitalized on a time frame. And the question becomes whether or not the time frame for that has passed and it's time for a rebirth of some kind.
Yeah, and I agree. And little by little, we tried to get away from like being so Jersey Shore. I mean, you can't fully take bro out of Robbie E. I mean, I am from Jersey. It is how I talk. It is a part of me. But as far as, like, the hokiness of Jersey Shore, like, a little bit tried to change it when I was at Rob Terry, and then as we got to the bromance, it was still a little different. It wasn't full-on just this Jersey Shore guy that wore bling. You know, we tried to show different sides of ourselves, and I feel like it became a little different. But the thing is, it's just a lot of that, the way I look and stuff, it's just who I am. It's hard to completely change it.
No, of course not. And with you now looking for a new home, basically, what are your choices that you're leaning towards? And are there any opportunities that have been presented already?
Well, I mean, it's only been 2 weeks. So you know what everybody says when they leave somewhere. They got big things in the works and blah, 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 and they're so happy. Like, I don't want to pretend like I have all these things going on. I mean, basically now, I do still want to wrestle full-time. So as far as independence, I'm booked out all the way through 2018 in the country, out of the country, all over the world. But I do want to be contracted somewhere full-time. So I don't know where that is. There have been talks, but nothing is set in stone. So, I mean, who's to say what happens in wrestling? I mean, I hope something happens. But if not, I am busy for the time being with independence. And I definitely, the one thing that I already, you know, have started to reach out and make some connections with is more reality shows. Because after I did The Amazing Race, I did have some offers for, like, filming of other shows. But at the time when I did The Race, TNA still had a full schedule with house shows and TV every week or every other week. So I really couldn't, like, dedicate myself to other stuff. So I am trying to branch out and to do more, like, television, whether it's reality shows or, you know, just normal acting gigs. I'm definitely going to have some stuff coming up in the next 6 months to a year with that.
Well, I mean, with your reality TV background, anything that involves any kind of celebrity, you could be on Dancing with the Stars, you could be on Celebrity Big Brother. I mean, there's options for you.
I would love to do any of that. I mean, because the way I look at it is, anything on TV is good publicity. It doesn't matter what it is. And it's fun, and I get to show a different dynamic of myself. And, I mean, even the Muscle and Fitness things. I mean, Muscle and Fitness is huge. I mean, just look at their social media following, and, you know, so many stars are connected to Muscle and Fitness. So even doing this is something I'm very excited about, and they're so happy with the videos. They're sending a camera crew out to my house, and they're going to film some stuff with their cameras because they want to make the quality even better. So I'm just, you know, excited about doing this stuff.
Right, and I think that the key for any person who lives as a public figure is to look at what they do. You have to look at yourself as a brand, and you have to find ways to make your brand match up with other things to coexist and co-promote and cross-promote. And I think that really allows you the opportunity to branch out beyond just being a professional wrestler.
Exactly. And then even now, I do the Dad Bod Destroyer on Mondays. On Thursdays, Muscle and Fitness is also connected to Men's Fitness, which is another huge fitness company. They're basically like their sister company. And I'll be doing videos for them on Thursday mornings. So that's that. And then on Tuesday mornings, on Fight TV, I have a little 2, 3, 4, whatever minute show called The Real Robbie E. which is basically I'm going to take you on the road with me every week. So whatever shows I have on the weekend or whatever stuff I have going on in my life during the week, it's like a little weekly show where you can kind of follow Robbie E. and see what happenings he has going on. So that's on Tuesdays. So Monday, Tuesday, and Thursdays at 10:30 a.m., I have all these different shows where people can kind of see me on websites and social media and stuff that have big platforms. So it's keeping my name out there. And like you said, you know, it's just good to keep to make connections and promote yourself.
One of the things that I've been curious about is, and I've seen you talk about it in other interviews, but right now WWE is promoting former Impact Wrestling stars at a rate that they never have in the past. Quite often, people who either started in Impact or left and went to Impact and came back never kind of quite got the exposure that we're seeing of people who are all former Impact Wrestling world champions right now. The AJ Styles, the Samoa Joes, etc. And I was wondering what your thoughts are on the success of people who've come from Impact into WWE.
Bobby Roode, Eric Young, AJ Styles, Samoa Joe. Good things. Good people deserve to have good things happen to them, and that they're all great people. They, you know, they have traveled the world wrestling. They've learned their craft. They've dedicated their lives to professional wrestling, and they deserve to be where they're at, making the money they're making and being on the level that they're at, because, I mean, they're good guys, they're good people, and they're the best at what they do. So I'm glad that finally now the taste is out and guys from Impact can actually, like, go other places. Because, yeah, for a while it was kind of like, nobody wants to touch Impact wrestlers, but it's good to see that changed. And, I mean, clearly they're there showing the world that they were stars all along, you know. So I am super pumped for all of them.
Between AJ Styles and Samoa Joe, who are obviously at the top of their games, Bobby Roode is now coming in. And I will say that I started to buy into Bobby Roode towards the end of his career as a solo performer in Impact Wrestling. But he seems to have really flourished on the stage that he's been given now. And everything I've read indicates that it's only upward for him there. So that's pretty exciting.
Yeah, I mean, and he just when you look at him with his entrance and his robe, he just looks like this massive star. You know what I'm saying?
Right, absolutely. Have you considered, or is there a possibility of you ending up in Ring of Honor? Because I think that you would fit in Ring of Honor very well.
I mean, again, to be honest, like I said, it's only been 2 weeks, so would I be willing, anywhere that would offer me a contract to wrestle full-time, I would be a 1,000% down to consider it and be a part of any company. It doesn't matter where. I just want to be contracted and wrestle full-time. So, yeah, I would love to be a part of Ring of Honor, but only time will tell, and we'll just see what happens, I guess.
I know that you keep saying it's only been 2 weeks, but I know this is something that you've been mulling over. You didn't make the snap decision 2 weeks ago, so I figured there might be something that you've been thinking about behind the scenes for a while.
Yeah, to be honest, I know it's going to sound crazy, but the day I asked for my release was kind of the day it really wasn't thought about much before that. I was going to work it out and stay, and I was going to try and hold out and see. It was really just depending on what I was offered, and that kind of like day of is when I said that I'm gone, you know? It really wasn't something that I was thinking for a while. It was that day I talked about it with my wife, and I just said, it's time, you know?
That makes me think of the fact that I think that we're seeing a couple instances in the news lately where people are reaching that point where it's just like, nope, this is what I want. I mean, it's all over the news right now that there's a strong possibility that Neville just walked out of WWE, and there's rumors that Nia Jax might have done the same. And it makes me just wonder, like, what is it that just like snaps in the person? It's like, you know what? I'm done with this. I'm not getting this opportunity, or I'm not going to do this anymore. I'm just out.
Yeah, I mean, everybody wants different things out of wrestling. You know, for some people, it's about money. For some people, it's about they want better storylines. For some people, they're sick of the travel. For some people, maybe they don't like how they're being treated as a human. Different people, I think, are affected in different ways. You know, I'm in wrestling to make money and be a star, so I only care about money. Some people might want other things. But for someone like Neville, I mean, God, he could ruffle around the world. You know, he's one of the best, and I'm sure he could go anywhere, and he has other opportunities to make as much money as he's making. So who knows what the reason is with him, you know? But I'm sure he would be doing great wherever he ends up.
Right. I mean, he's somebody that I specifically could have very easily understood just getting entirely pissed off. Like, I've worked for the last year, basically, to build this character, to build up this division for you, and all of a sudden, you've got me jobbing to a guy who's a joke? Like, you know, like, is a joke. That doesn't do my career any good. And I would have been pissed off, too, to be honest.
Yeah, and again, and that's fair. That's fair for him to say and you to say. And someone like me, I would look at that and say, well, what do I care? Wrestling's not real, and I'm making the same amount of money, so it doesn't matter to me. And neither of us are wrong. We're both allowed to have our opinions or what we want out of our work, you know what I'm saying? So that's why I said, like, different people have different reasons for what they want to get out of wrestling.
Right. Your way of thinking probably would allow a longer career that would be more beneficial in the long run, as opposed to somebody saying, like, you know what? No, this is, I feel like this is devaluing me, and I don't want to be devalued.
Like, I look at it like, well, and I get that. It's like if I was casted in a movie and you have, and, you know, I'm getting killed in halfway through the movie or at the end of the movie, as long as I'm getting paid the same as if I was in the whole movie, I mean, it doesn't really matter. I'll be the first one to tell you. I got into pro wrestling. I want to be a star. I want to be on TV, and I want to make money. So that's what I care about. But I respect guys who don't want to devalue themselves, and, you know, they want more out of their storylines and their character and stuff, and that's cool too.
Because, well, doesn't that equate to more money in the long run? One of the things that I've always thought about the way WWE handles people as their careers with WWE are getting ready to come to a close, or perhaps they're moving towards the end of a contract or something with WWE, they will devalue the character or the performer on television so that if they were to leave the company, that's the last impression people had of them, and then that may affect their ability to get work afterwards.
Yeah, and I get that. I think that has changed a little bit now in 2017, because I feel like everybody loses a lot because everyone wrestles every week. So, like, it's not like anymore where guys only wrestle every few months on a big pay-per-view where, like, winning and losing matters. Like, everyone, I mean, go all the way up, name the whole roster of anyone who's anyone right now, world champions, they all lose and win every week, every other week. It doesn't really matter. But I do get what you're saying, but again, it's still for different circumstances. So, like, for me, there's been so many times when I had to do things. I lost to a girl on TV, like, so many things where I could have, like, fought it or complained. But in my situation, if 4 years ago I would have said, hey, I don't want to lose to a girl, I don't want to lose to Brooke, they probably would have been like, all right, and I probably would have been fired a few months later, and then I wouldn't have had a job for the past 4 years. As where some guys maybe can speak up about their character and put their foot down because they have other things. So it's circumstance. It depends on who you are, you know, I guess.
Right. Well, I think that clout certainly helps dictate what you can and cannot say and do. Like, if you are at the top of the food chain, you can say, no, I'm not going to do that. And people will probably work around you a little bit more than if you're somewhere in the middle of the food chain.
And exactly.
And certainly, yeah, if you're at the bottom, good luck.
That's what I mean. So, yeah, I agree with you. Like, you know, losing or something stupid would devalue you, but only certain people could or have the balls to or want to take the risk to speak up about it, you know?
Yeah, the thing that always comes to mind when talking about something like this is the situation with CM Punk, where he was legitimately at the top of the game and was like, you know what, I'm not liking this. I'm out of here. I'm taking my ball and going home.
Yeah.
So
you gotta remember, he's on the top, and he's a millionaire who is, you know, I'm sure set for life, and, you know, and when you're that big of a star, you know you have so many other opportunities and other things you could do, so he kind of has that confidence because of that, you know?
Right. People do tend to forget that pro wrestling is a business, and the way it's handled is in the same way as any other business. The people at the top make more. The people in the middle, you know, get based on their potential to move upward, and they get paid accordingly. And then there are people at the bottom who are, for all intents and purposes, the minimum wage workers who show up to just sort of make everything happen.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
So you already have bookings around the world. Where are your first international stops?
I have stuff coming up in Mexico. I have stuff coming up in Italy. I have stuff coming up in England. A lot of the full details of it all are getting confirmed over the next few weeks, because I don't handle all of my bookings, so to be honest, I don't even know full details of them all, but I definitely have, England and Mexico stuff coming up.
And what is your wife, how does your wife handle this when you're away and she's got two babies?
Well, I mean, to be honest with you, it's not long periods of time. It's only a few days. You know, I think the UK is going to be 4 days and Mexico, it's 3 days. So it's really not too bad. And to be honest, she actually travels now a lot during the week, and then I travel on the weekend. So we miss each other a lot. But when we're home, we're actually able to full on be with our kids. So like during the week, I'm with them alone, and on the weekend, she's with them alone. So it works out, and we can both handle it. It is what it is. She's understood my job for years, and I understand her. So we make it work. And it's good because we don't need daycare. So we actually get to be with our kids all the time, and someone else is raising them, which is awesome.
Well, and it's also fantastic that the two of you are never home at the same time, because that way you don't end up with, like, two more.
Exactly. It really is like that. We're passing a lot, but yeah, I know. Two more would be scary. That would be Christy Hemme stuff.
Yeah, yeah, that's some Christy Hemme shit right there. That's, like, territory that nobody needs to go into. Well, Robbie, thanks for talking today. I appreciate it. It's always fun to talk to you. It's always good to check in with you and to see what you're doing. I'm excited. Like I said, I'd read that you had been released from Impact. To me, honestly, felt a little exciting because of the fact that it opens up so many more opportunities for you that probably could be explored that Impact might not have been willing to explore with you. So it's exciting. New opportunities for you ahead. And I wish you the best of luck in all those.
Hey, I appreciate it, man. If you could, just find real quick and just follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Robbie E. Impact. And then check out my website, robbie-e.com. And then, of course, Mondays on Muscle and Fitness social media, Thursdays on Men's Fitness social media, and Tuesdays at Fight TV social media.
Awesome. There you go, guys. You can check him out on all of those. Connect with Robbie E. Robbie E., thanks for joining us. I appreciate it, and have a great day.
All right, man. You too.
All right. Bye. All right, everybody. That was former Impact Wrestling star and star of television's Amazing Race, Robbie E. He is now on the independent circuit, so check him out. He could be coming to an arena, an event, or a promotion near you in the very near future. We at Arm Drag Takedown, that would be me, you guys, me and you, all the listeners out there, wish Robbie E. the best of luck in all of his future endeavors, and we look forward to seeing what he presents in the near future. Meanwhile, remember, episode 4 of Arm Drag Takedown with Pollo Del Mar will feature Impact Wrestling Knockouts champion Sienna the Savage. I am all about finding out more about what she has in store for us, what her thoughts are on the upcoming Bound for Glory November 5th in Ottawa, Ontario, Canada, and what the hell that pinky upward thing means, because I don't understand it. I think it's lost on me, but I'm sure she'll shed light on that and much more when she joins us next week. Remember, follow Arm Drag Takedown on Facebook and Twitter. It's ADT with PDM. ADT with PDM. You're listening to Arm Drag Takedown with Pollo Del Mar. We've got 75 minutes in the can this episode, and I am down for the count. Stick a fork in me, honey. I am done. We'll see you, or talk to you, next episode.